This is Music Respawn at GDC. I'm Kate Remington, and I'm talking with Penka Kuneva. And it's just always so nice to catch up with you, and thank you so much for taking some time to chat.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's my great honor to be your guest.
I am so intrigued by the topic of a panel that you're doing called Finding the Balance Between Flawed and Flawless, because I've never talked with a composer who says, that's good enough, I'm just going to phone it in. And yet, there have got to be some choices that you have to make at some point to just decide that it's good enough. So the whole topic is so interesting. And so first of all, I'd love to know how you came to be part of that panel.
This panel was an idea and a pitch by John Robert Matz. And I just loved it. It's essentially a panel on creativity and workflow for composers. And we will tackle very important issues such as how to get unblocked from a writer's block, how to manage your time, then really to assess when things are good enough and brilliant, and in which cases everything has to be absolutely perfect. So I thought this panel was really a very interesting idea, and I helped a little bit by adding just a little bit more of a content to his questions that he already had.
Well, this is a topic that doesn't, I don't think, get talked about very much, and especially it's interesting for me because by the time I hear the music from a game, it's finished, it's absolutely complete, it's been implemented, and in many cases already produced into a soundtrack. So finding out about that process that you all go through and the decisions that you have to make, I think, is really fascinating. And so I would love to know how you would define something that turned out perfectly.
So creativity is a long and very arduous journey. The very first phase of creativity has, you can think of it, it's like filled with sharks and oil slick, and it's just this dark place where there's a lot of challenges. How I'm going to tackle this? What is the best possible sound for this game? There are a lot of questions. All of us media composers are collaborative composers. This means we always work with the ideas, with the property of other people, and that's actually powerful, because we can always reach out, ask questions, and that's what we do. So the first phase of creativity is working together with our collaborators. And at that stage, we demo. The demos have to be very good to get us the job. I would say how we compare and how we grow is always by comparing our work to the established industry standard, which is the AAA games, indie studios that push the bar up. And all of us composers do a lot of research, which is constant listening, analyzing, and a very thoughtful, very deep listening of the incredible ocean of music that's out there. And in doing this, we grow to understand, we kind of develop a sense of what really sounds good, what games have interesting style, what games create interesting sound, and that's how the bar gets pushed up higher and higher. I would say, with a hand in my heart, the game scores are the most creative, most masterful, and skillfully done products in terms of music, in terms of modern commercial music. And I'm super happy to be a game composer precisely because the game scoring affords us incredible creativity. So I would say it's a long process, it's a hard process. We really have to commit to the growth and the learning curve, and always keep your eye on the prize, which is the finished soundtrack, and overcome all the hurdles, the music sounding not so good, with the intention that it will get better and better until it's finally delivered.
Well, that's an interesting part of the process, making it, you know, constantly improving. And I'm wondering if at any point you have to step away from what you've created and maybe have somebody else take a listen to help find your way out of that thicket.
This is exactly what happens. We always submit early stage, early demos to our collaborators. So we get a lot of feedback from our collaborators, both in terms of developers and also music supervisors who have very evolved ear, and also the ability to express criticism in a way that's constructive. So at that point, the composer begins the iterations, essentially the revisions. One of the very difficult skills to learn, and you only learn it in life, is how to implement feedback. And what we do is we continuously implement client feedback. And that's not easy, because they have to be able to articulate well what needs to change. The composer has to interpret sufficiently well the feedback. And that's one process I would say you can't learn from books. You really have to do it over years on many projects, work with many people, understand different temperaments, understand different people's personalities and how they communicate. You know, some people are very quiet. Maybe they're more expressive in writing. Other developers are very they pick up the phone, they call you and give you feedback verbally, so you have to take notes, make sure you don't forget what they say. So adapting to the individual style of each developer is also a skill that the composers develop over time. I would say these are all collaborative skills that collaborative composers develop over time, and it happens through jobs, through situations that are real life, and we always do our best.
Well, that's a difficult thing to probably kind of navigate, because I have found talking about music is, I think, the most difficult thing there is, apart from maybe describing a color. And so it must be, as you say, a very learned skill to sort of sift through what the client has said they want and try to make something that's going to make them happy.
But the game developers are the most brilliant people out there. So in the 20 years I've been a collaborative composer, I understood that there are two avenues that are most useful and productive in these conversations. And they go hand in hand. You can't have just one or the other. You have to have both. So the first avenue is talking about ideas. These are the conceptual conversations. You know, basically, the composer is given art and concept art and characters and costumes and environments. And we sort of soak in that visual component, which is the part of the visual style of the game. And then the conversations about mechanics and maps and just kind of more technical nitty-gritty, that's really important. This is the one component. The other thing is, it's a simple question, you know, lead me to a couple of iTunes links or MP3 links or YouTube links where the music sounds the closest to what you hear. And that's a very important thing, and most game developers volunteer folders of MP3s, but if they don't, then it's my job to say, no, please just give me a couple of MP3s that you really feel kind of capture what the tone you're going for. And between the keywords and the concepts and the art and all the visual assets, and between the MP3, we call them style guides, then that's a really solid foundation. That's giving me a pretty good idea. these are the conversations with the game developers. In addition to this, I do a lot of research. I'm married to a music editor who listens to one soundtrack every day of his life. We watch a lot of movies. We play a lot of games. So that experience becomes kind of the visceral, something you soak in. You don't read in books. You kind of take it in. And when I'm scoring a game, oh, your game is like a, you know, survival horror. Well, there's a long vernacular of how survival horror is scored. So let me take a look and see what I really like. So kind of being able to rely upon this amazing vernacular of what's been done before, and then you begin to ask questions, you know, do you like this? Do you like this game? Do you like this approach? And then in that kind of a disambiguation, they say, well, this we like, this we don't, this we hate. Then you understand, okay, this is what they really are going for. And with this knowledge, you know, between their concept art and ideas and the MP3s and my own knowledge of the genre, then I'm off to the races. I can do this score with confidence that I will deliver something that they will love. And of course, I deliver small bites, demos, theme levels, and I get immediate feedback. The first week is kind of scary because basically the composer has to wonder, are they going to like it? Did I nail it? Are they going to just hate it? But then in conversations, the composer understands, okay, they really respond to this. They kind of really are not so hot about that. And then you move forward with that knowledge, and it's a very collaborative process. It's kind of very iterative. Every week we have these conversations, whether it's an email or phone calls or in-person meetings. Usually they're too busy, so it's usually emails or phone calls. But in that process of working together, the score takes shape.
Well, and one thing that we haven't really touched on here is that a lot of times you have to do this in a very short amount of time, which adds an additional layer of pressure. So besides all of these discussions, over the time, over your career, what are some of the, I guess maybe shortcuts you've discovered that can kind of help you get up to speed quickly?
Understand the taste of my collaborators deeply, knowing what they like, what they would respond for. Number one, and number two, having the style guides, that's really powerful. Basically, they say, well, this is what I like. So I'm like, okay, I understand what you like, and let me now really think, sort of live inside your world for a couple of days, and here's my music. I would say, again, just that notion of genre, what has been done in the past, what is innovative right now, what they like. I would say the shortcut is really understanding the taste of my collaborators, their temperament, their likes and dislikes, because obviously they would expect of me to give them something that works for their game and they will like. So, I don't know, composers become very intuitive, and composers become very astute, and we serve the project, we serve the vision of our collaborators. So it's an attitude. Basically, you're a giving creative artist and you want to serve the game, and that's a powerful experience, because the ego is kept at check. And no, all we want the first is the game to get the best possible score that will really elevate the game and set it apart from similar games. In game development, the music is a powerful tool how the games brand themselves and differentiate themselves from the competition. And smart developers understand that, and they use the score and the audio as a branding tool.
Yeah, I've heard that time and time again, that so often the pitch, you know, from the studio to the composer is, we want something that's instantly identifiable and really gives like a signature sound.
And that's very difficult. Usually it's a novel combination of instruments that's not very used or very conventional. So there's always an element of innovation, and that's difficult because you have to be an innovator, but you kind of build upon what you know already. Certain composers are hired because they have a very specific sound or very unique sound, and that's also more power to them, because that's why they get hired. I always strive to be innovative. I strive to have innovative elements. I'm also classically trained, so I come from a very traditional composing background, not classical training, orchestral music. But I strive to diversify and, you know, learn about electronica. And my latest score has acoustic guitar and a lot of guitar. So I would say the intent is always to find the perfect sonic world, the perfect signature that will define this gaming experience, that will make it memorable. That's the impulse always. And then we refine, okay, what style, what instruments, do you want more melodic, less melodic, more textural? These are the kind of sort of nitty-gritty cash questions, but the impulse always is, let's find the most unique defining sound signature for this game, whether it's the tiniest iPhone mobile game or the biggest AAA franchise. This is always the impulse to make the score part of this unique gaming experience.
What are some of the things, I mean, for me, having to deal with the pressure of deadlines, I would find that very difficult, but I'm wondering how you deal with it and how you deal with, let's say you've kind of hit a block, like a roadblock with composing. How do you deal with that?
I make flow charts for the time. I always work backwards. Like if I have a deadline on a certain day, I count the days backwards. I calculate how long it's going to take me. Usually if I'm demoing, I have 2 days, and one day I'll just write out the ideas, and the second day I program and mix the music. No, deadlines is something we learn to deal with, for sure. It's, again, a learned skill. I don't feel pressure because I love what I do. I have a large network of people I can reach out for advice, for critique. I do run my demos by my friends, a couple of close friends who give me critical feedback. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not something that we learn to handle.
Wow, it's so impressive because, you know, what you've come up with for all of the games that you've scored and all your passion projects and your films, every single one of them sounds different, and yet it's so incredibly polished. One thing I would love to know is if you've gone back and listened to music that you've done from previous games or projects and ever thought about, well, here's what I would have done differently if I'd had a little more time.
I do that. I revisit older scores often, and the intention is always, how could I have done this better? What can I learn from that past experience? Yeah, I think we all build upon our past experiences to move forward, and it's a good experience to revisit old music, but at the same time, I'm always so busy with new deadlines and new demos, so I kind of have to look into the future and say, what can I learn from other people's music? I do listen to a lot of music. My husband still listens to one soundtrack every morning, so there's always too much music in our house, so probably I'd say my emphasis is on new music, current music, future ideas, futuristic sort of innovative ideas, rather than just deconstructing my own music. But I always strive to be perfect. Also, as a woman composer, I feel there's always more pressure to deliver amazing product. So I kind of, all my life, I was driven by this impulse to be better, just to get jobs and thrive. So I do spend a lot of time in learning, growth, research, passion projects. And I think this is why I'm getting jobs, because people see that drive towards learning and always to be composing, always to be on the learning curve. That's a powerful thing. People are impressed by that.
Do you ever have a tough time letting a project go? I mean, you've got to take it up to a certain point and ship it at a certain point. And then, I mean, how do you deal with the fact that, well, you know, if I'd had another week, I could have done that?
It's not difficult to let go. I ship it, I deliver, I try my best. The project is shipped, I'm already on the next thing. I don't hold on to it. I try my best. Sometimes I have a perspective from the future, but at the time I just ship it and I'm already focused on something else.
Well, Penka, it's been wonderful to talk with you. The panel is going to be fascinating, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for the honor to be your guest, Kate. I so much appreciate it.